take his mask and shut. I ain't wearing it no more. Y'all look at me like I'm from Mars when I don't wear it in the store. Don't even try to make me put it on or I'm walking out the door. Take his mask and shut. I ain't wearing it no more. I've been shopping in this place for almost 15 years. And I've seen all kinds of viruses, but I've never lived in fear. Now I know that Corona's real and it probably ain't a lot to ask. But I ain't a bank robber and I ain't the Lone Ranger and I don't want to wear this mask. Take this mask and shove it. I ain't wearing it no more. Y'all look at me like I'm the devil when I don't wear it in the store. Don't even try to make me put it on or I'm walking out the door. Take his mask and shove it. I ain't wearing it no more. COVID-19's a real bad dude and they say there ain't no cure. Hydroxychloroquine or a new vaccine, I just can't be sure. Think I'll drink a little shine every morning when I start my day. Might not kill the virus, but it'll give me the courage to say, take this mask and shove it. Corona needs to be gone. My woman stays home, spends all my money on Amazon. I just want to hug everybody like I did before. So take this plague and shove it. We ain't taking it no more. And take this mask and shove it. No, honey, I got it right here. I told you I was going to put it on. It's right here. I'm wearing it. I ain't going without it.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Armchair Survivalist. My name is Kurt Wilson. I'm the Armchair Survivalist, and today is August the 8th in the year 2021. Welcome to the show. If you go to armchairsurvivalist.com, you can see there, well, you can get a little bio about me, and then you can scroll down, and you will see how to listen to my show. Obviously, you know at least one way to do it. But the other ways are all kinds of podcast venues, Stitcher, Anchor, iHeartRadio, Podbean. I am on YouTube, and if you listen to me on YouTube, stop it, because YouTube's going to ban me, because I make the mistake of telling the truth, and when communists are in charge of anything, they don't like the word truth, or reality for that matter. But I'm on like 20 different podcast venues. They're all listed there. You can pick your choice, figure out what you want to listen to. I'm on satellite, Global Star 3 satellite. There's a live feed right there you can click on and listen. You can listen in my chat room. At the top of armchairsurvivalist.com, you'll see these boxes. One of them says, listen to my show live Sunday in the chat room. Click on it. You're in the chat room. Boom. And if you miss the show and want to listen to it on Monday, listen 24 hours a day to the recent show of the Armchair Survivalist, click here. It's right there. It's an aqua little box. You can click there and you can listen to the most recent show. Or you can go to my archive. On the left-hand side of the page, you will see the little black and white nipper dog listening to the RCA Victor gramophone. You click on that, and you'll pop up a list of all the different shows I've done for the current year. All right? So that's the ways that you can do it. Now, you can listen to each of the shows in the current year, or you can download. That's available there. You can download all the shows, listen to them later. You can also listen to me on your phone. It's not toll-free. And sometimes the operator's too drunk to answer. But it's area code 641-741-0371. If that's not the right number, there'll be an intercept there that tells you to dial another number. Hey, it's free, so I'm not going to bitch. Area code 641-741-0371. And by the way, if you know any other ways to listen to me, give me an email. Send me an email. And my address is right down there, kw@armchairsurvivalist.com. Let's see. Yeah, that's about it for that part of it. Now I want to get to some business for the company, which is Survival Enterprises. You can go to SE1 Samuel Edwards, the numeral 1, SE1.us, or survivalenterprises.com. You can see all the stuff we have. We specialize in health products that are not normal. Any of you who take my products, you know what I'm talking about. We save lives. We're not medical in any way, shape, or form. We actually give a damn about our people. Now, if you go to armchairsurvivalist.com, you will see a security system there. It's called a VPN, a virtual private network, VPN. And that's at the top of the page on the right-hand side. There's a link to a company I use and have used, and I've even bought a lifetime membership to them. So when I'm on the internet, nobody knows it's me. Nobody knows where I am. It's real simple, and they have all kinds of weird sales, 80% off, 73% off. It's just go there, click on it. It's self-explanatory, and if you have to really grasp the understanding of what a VPN is, you probably it's too late for you. Mountain House Foods, freeze-dried foods, storage up to, 40 to 50 years, we determine. They're freeze-dried, pre-packaged, in a pouch. There's 15 pouches in a bucket. A bucket's $150 delivered anywhere in the United States. This is about a week's supply of food for one person. The key is, it's idiot-proof. You add boiling water, give it 15 minutes, you're done. You got dinner. All right, I've got about 20 buckets of it left. I started with 60. Radios. First off, I have the shortwave radio in. AM, FM, shortwave, NOAA, emergency band. This thing charges its internal batteries with solar panel, a crank. You can plug it into the wall. It picks up shortwave excellently. It comes with a free 21-foot antenna as well. This is a must-have. I don't care where you buy a shortwave radio. You've got to have something that's at least mediocre in quality. Because when the Schumer hits the fan, there's nothing else out there. You're not going to hear AM or FM unless it's 100% pure government propaganda, as if it isn't already. But that's what shortwave's for. And ham radios. These are hard as hell to find, and I'm not exaggerating. I spent the last 2 weeks trying to rebuild the stock I had. And when I say stock, I had 6 radios. These are handheld units. They will broadcast from 1 to 8 watts, depending on which unit. They're $50 to $75, something like that, okay? They're handheld units. The ham radios, they are the only form of communication that will be available, and that is available in many parts of the world. And in an emergency, you're SOL if you don't have one of these, because you can't hear anything. There is no communications. Your cell phone's gone. It's toast. So you go to survivalenterprises.com, SE1.us, and you go to, on the left-hand side, I think it says on sale, it's on sale, special sale, something like that. Click on that. It'll take you to the page that shows you these radios, and it explains different frequencies and stuff like that. So if you're thinking about a communication system, you've got to get these before you can't even get them. I can find onesies and twosies, but having a group of them, and I just got 18 in. A guy went out of business, and I bought everything he had left. So if you want any of these ham radios, you better get them as quickly as possible. All right, let's get into the economy. These first two articles are just so you can hear them. They're kind of strange. Like the first one, there were two ships in the Gulf of Oman that lost control. Now, that's all that came out, all right? But you got to understand, there's always, you got to read between the lines on this. These are two giant container ships. They lost control. That means somebody else gained control of their steerage and their power from a distance. Obviously, it wasn't somebody aboard ship, okay? And the second article, and now I'll have anything I talk about is posted in my show notes. And by the way, all my show notes are now up. I finally got them up. So you go to armchairsurvivalist.com. On the left-hand side of the page, you'll see the word show notes. You click on that. It'll take you to a page that lists my shows chronologically and a little mini title of what the show's about. Okay, you click on that, and it'll take you to the page that lists all the links that I talked about. And it'll list some links I didn't even get the chance to talk about, but they should be up there. So anyway, these will all be listed. I'm sure you heard about forest fires all over the United States. Well, there's fires all over the world, and Turkey broke out. Turkey broke out with 98 fires simultaneously. This blew my mind. As soon as I saw an article, and it was an agricultural article about how Turkey broke out with all these fires, well, I pay attention to that because that's where our oregano oil comes from. It comes from Turkey. They just unearthed the gates of a temple for Zeus. And it was in this city called Aizanoi, A-I-Z-A-N-O-I, in western Turkey. The city has been there for about 5,000 years. This temple was made a little over 2,000 years ago. And as soon as they unearthed the entrance to Zeus's temple, fires broke out all over Turkey. You figure it out. I got no clue. I'm just giving the data to you. You figure it out. Google is going to kill off all of their old versions of Android next month. When I say old, I mean like 2.3.7, I think it was what they said. So if you have any gizmos, you have any Android phones, and you probably don't, but you might have some tablets or something like that that has old versions of Android on it, they're going to kill them off. It's 2.3.7. That's what it is. So they're doing that to protect themselves because they can't keep updating that kind of stuff. And this I thought was astounding. You know, people getting gas and this COVID horse crap. All of a sudden, you have people having to pump their own gas. And yes, there are millennials out there who have never picked up a gas pump in their lives, so they have no clue. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not just the millennials that are kind of stupid in certain things. When I was a kid, I had a VW Bug, and you lift the hood on the front of that, and your gas tank's up there. So I'm 16 years old getting gas, and here's this girl next to me with a VW Bug and a gas pump in her hand, looking around, very befuddled. I said, do you know how to fill gas in that? She goes, no, my dad just bought me this car. I have no idea. So I had to show her how to open the front hood on a VW Bug and take the gas cap off and fill it there, right? So it's not just the millennials now. It's just people don't get educated. Well, a newspaper came out to teach people how to pump their own gas. Now, in the state of Oregon, it has always been, quote-unquote, illegal for you to pump your own gas. And they have a bunch of BS about why that's true. I can tell you why that's true. Just a real quick little story here. Years ago, and I mean years ago, in the early 70s, this guy came up to the gas pump. He had a one-gallon container, and it was cardboard. And he filled it with gas, and then he walked back to his car, which was parked alongside the road about a mile away and out of gas. And he poured the gas as best he could into the gas cap, right? And he got a lot of it all over the car. So then he put the gas cap on, and then he lit a cigarette, and he blew himself up. Well, his family sued the state of Oregon for all kinds of weird crap, and they won. So Oregon came out and said, all right, from now on, we just realized people are too stupid to pump their own gas, so we're going to have people pumping it for them. Okay, now there's a lot of stories out there why this happened. That's the reality because I worked there at the time when it happened. I was there when it happened. But these newspapers were doing everybody a very good deed when they came out with a how-to video on how to pump your own gas. Venezuela. Do you remember Germany prior to World War II, where people, and this was a joke, but it was almost real, they would use a wheelbarrow full of their Deutschmarks to buy a loaf of bread. Because Venezuela is a communist country, and, well, you know, it's actually more socialist because it's not full communist yet. See, that's the thing. Democrat socialism, communism, is on the same dial, like on a radio, volume control. Turned down low, you have 3-year-old children, and you turn it up one notch, and you have a Democrat. Turn it up a few more notches, and you have socialists. And you have to be socialist for a while so that you can destroy capitalism, and then you can turn it up all the way to communism. Venezuela is about 2/3 of the way up. So they've decided how to handle their economy is to slash 6 zeros from their currency. Right now, one U.S. dollar is worth 4 million bolivars. 4 million. And they're going to do this slashing October 1st. They're going to issue all new currency. This is what we have to look forward to here because we have communists in full control now of the United States. This is their fourth year of hyperinflation in Venezuela. It is their eighth year of recession. They tripled the minimum wage. This is how the government, a communist government, a socialist turning into a communist government does. Because they haven't totally 100% destroyed the economy yet. It's in the process, so they're still socialist. Just like the Democrats are here, they're still socialists working on becoming communists. They triple the minimum wage. You know how the government does this kind of crap? They come out and say, all right, you can live for free in a house or an apartment and never pay your rent, don't worry about it. And the landlords, being the evil overseers and capitalists, are told, you're not going to get paid. Oh, well. So they did, the government tripled the minimum wage. Tripled the minimum wage, but the new amount is not even enough to buy a couple pounds of meat. So the new notes will be coming out, instead of millions of bolivars, it'll be 5, 10, 20, 50, and 100 bolivars, and a 1 bolivar coin. You know, that's exactly what they have here in the United States. Like 5, 10, 20, 50, and $100 bills. And they want to have a $1 coin, which goes over like a lead balloon every single time they try it. You've heard about how Spirit Airlines is canceling all of its flights, 50% of its flights. It's not just Spirit. There's all kinds of different airlines that are canceling flights in the hundreds. And the reason is this. All of the airlines have mandatory vaccinations. Their pilots are dying or becoming hospitalized. And their employees are walking off when they're told they need to have their genetics modified by this shot. They're just saying screw you and walking off. There's thousands of people that are doing this. I've had emails come from at least a dozen people who work for various airlines, from Delta to American to Spirit to United, that they're being told it's mandatory to work. You have to have a shot, and they're just saying that's it. I'm done. This is insane. They want to kill us off? No, not going to happen. Businesses. Now, what do you think? Do you think American businesses are committing suicide by mandating vaccines? I do. There are people. You see now on TV and through the economic reports about how there was 943,000 people got a job this month. Why don't you see how many walked off the job next month? For the main reason is they're told that they have to get a vaccination. What happens if we all said no?
What if every New Yorker said, I'm not complying? What if every New Yorker said, I won't get vaccinated? You can fire me. What if every New Yorker was willing to get fired? Go on unemployment, stop paying rent, hold on to that money, and then move to a state where they could be free. What would happen then? What would happen if every bus driver stopped driving the buses? What would happen if the MTA workers stopped manning the subways? What would happen if people said, you know what, I'm not going to go out to a restaurant, I'm not going to get vaccinated just so I can have a meal outside. You guys can have it. What then? This isn't the first time that I've seen this. A couple of months ago, I had to get blood work done, and the clinic had no phlebotomists there because they had all refused to get vaccinated. And so there was only one woman there that had to take care of everyone. And so everything had to be rescheduled. What if that were to happen in every clinic in New York City? What would happen if everyone just stopped complying? Is it possible that the erosion of our rights and our liberties and the gaslighting and the lies would stop if we just stopped complying? Ben Franklin once said that he who would sacrifice liberty for safety deserves neither and loses both. That's a lot to think about, and there's a lot at stake. Push back, America. Do not comply.
And those of you who know me personally know that I don't comply. I never have, and I never will. Now we're going into health. Now look, I have so much data on this. There is so much conflicting data. And there always has been, and there always will be whenever you have Americans and communists in control, because the communists lie always. You can sit there. You know, you're sitting in your home, and you're hearing about how we now have 87 million people in the hospitals. Hospitals overrun, and you work for the hospital, and you're like, what? What are you talking about? They told me to take the day off. They don't have any patients. I don't have any work to do. So I'm just going to go through these things, okay? COVID is rampant in a new aircraft carrier that Britain commissioned. And why is it rampant in this aircraft carrier? Because all the sailors are vaccinated. Gibraltar had zero COVID patients until they became 100% vaccinated. Now they've had, it's a 2,500% spike in this disease, which, how do they figure out what it is? Because it doesn't exist. They're just guessing. 50% of new COVID cases are vaccinated in Israel. 50% are already vaccinated. UK data came out, showed 87% of the people who have died from this so-called COVID-19 were vaccinated. 87%. CDC, who's supposed to protect us. Do you know, and I talked about this before, there were three babies that died from a little rocking bassinet, and they recalled them all. And now we've had over 12,000 people in the United States die from this shot, and they're still pushing it. CDC study came out on 12 to 17-year-olds. Now, what piece of crap parent would allow their child to get an authorized vaccination, just an experimental one? What kind of piece of crap parent would allow that? So this CDC study shows that over 400 reports of heart inflammation, and this is well known, 14 deaths, 9,000 adverse events. This is asinine. This is almost Darwin's theory. You know, the strong survive, the weak kill themselves off. The German government authorized an autopsy of a fully vaxxed person who died from COVID. Now, this was an 86-year-old man. He received a single dose of the vaccine and died a month later after being infected by coronavirus. Okay, now he had a medical history including systemic arterial hypertension, chronic venous insufficiency, dementia, prostate. I mean, he had a bunch of comorbidities. According to the autopsy, which I will post, his entire body had become overrun with high viral RNA loads. And these are, what that means, this is the vaccine-induced spike proteins. You're being injected with an operating system. This is the specialized spike protein, and it got into every single organ of his body, and that's what killed him. New York City announces that vaccine requirements for all public activities, anything you can do with two or more people, including go on a subway, go in a restaurant, go to a movie theater, anything, you have to have a vaccine. And those of you in the U.S. military, all branches, the communist, racist Secretary of Defense has announced that it will be mandatory. The vaccination will be mandatory for all active duty military. I've already had three Marines come in the store and say they will quit. Simple as that. They will quit. They will resign from the military. Now, I don't know how it works in this touchy-feely military that exists now in the United States. I've had two of them were saying they were going to go AWOL. I said, no, don't do that, because that instantly you can be in deep doo-doo. Just tell them you refuse to take the vaccination because it's an emergency use authorization. It is not a legal vaccination. And you got to be careful of this now, because the FDA is threatening to legalize all of these vaccinations within the next 3-4 months. So the Secretary of Defense is going to Secretary of Defense is going to announce mandatory vaccination for all active duty military, whether you're in the U.S. or not. If you're active duty, you're going to get it. Now, you know, like a bully in high school, if you let him get away with pulling crap on people, he's going to keep doing it. And this communist regime that we have in control of the United States now is doing the same thing. And unfortunately, people generally in the United States have become quite stupid, and they believe they're authority figures. Now, to help you guys out, I discovered a sound effect, and it's the one that is used on Jeopardy when they give a wrong answer. And in my case, it's going to be every time you hear a lie, you're going to hear that sound, and I'm sure you'll figure it out. But I listened to a briefing, and I couldn't go on with it. The person in charge of coronavirus committee, whatever the hell his name is, he did a talk, And then the female in charge of the Centers for Disease Control, and then Dr. Fauci participated in this speech. So I once I got done listening to that female tell us a bunch of hogwash horse crap, I couldn't go on any further. But this is the White House getting ready to tell us that they are going to start mandating vaccinations for all Americans. Now, they've already done it for healthcare workers. They're doing it for the military. They're doing it for all federal employees. So you can expect what's coming. But anyway, just to help you out, here's their talk.
I want to provide an update on our whole of government response to the pandemic. We remain concerned about the continued rise in cases driven by the Delta variant. These cases are concentrated in communities with lower vaccination rates. In fact, the 7 states with the lowest vaccination rates represent just about 8.5% of the U.S. population, but account for more than 17% of cases. And 1 in 3 cases nationwide occurred in Florida and Texas this past week. We spent the last 6 months preparing for every scenario. As a result, we have the tools we need to manage. Most importantly, the tool that is most important is the highly effective vaccines. We have enough vaccines for every American who wants one. They're free and they're easily accessible within 5 miles of 90% of where Americans live. And in just 6 months, we've already gotten 165 million Americans fully vaccinated, including 80% of seniors. But we have much more work to do to put this pandemic behind us. There are still about 90 million eligible Americans who are unvaccinated, and we need them to do their part, roll up their sleeves, and get vaccinated. Each and every shot matters. In the past 2 weeks, we've seen a 50% increase in the average number of 12 to 17-year-olds getting vaccinated each day. We're also working with states to encourage vaccinations through incentives, which have made a difference throughout the vaccination effort. But in addition to incentives, it's time to impose some requirements based on the realities of different risks unvaccinated individuals pose versus those who have been vaccinated. Last week, the Department of Veteran Affairs announced it will require doctors and nurses and other healthcare workers who provide medical care to our veterans to get vaccinated. This is in lockstep with many healthcare employers around the country who are requiring vaccinations and will protect our veterans when they get medical care. At the president's direction, the Department of Defense is looking into how and when they will add COVID-19 vaccination to the list of required vaccinations for the military. And to protect the federal workforce, their loved ones, and their communities, the president announced that every federal government employee will be asked to attest to their vaccination status. Any federal employee who does not attest or is not vaccinated will be required to mask, no matter where they work, get tested once or twice a week, socially distance, and generally will not be allowed to travel for work. We're taking steps to apply similar standards to all federal contractors. It's simple. If you want to do business with the federal government, get your workers vaccinated. And the president has called on all employers around the country to protect their own workforces. And now we're seeing positive momentum across the private sector. The Chamber of Commerce, the National Association of Manufacturers, and the Business Roundtable have all applauded the actions we're taking. Companies like Google, Walmart, and Disney have announced vaccination requirements for their employees, joining hundreds of universities and hospital systems across the country who are implementing similar requirements. With these ongoing efforts, there's a strong sense of progress. And you see it in the number of shots we're getting into people's arms each day. Over the past few weeks, we've seen a nearly 70% increase in the average number of new people getting vaccinated. In the last 7 days alone, 3 million Americans have gotten their first shot. That's the highest 7-day total since July 4th. And just today, we hit 70% of adults with at least one shot, including 90% of seniors with at least one shot. These are significant milestones in our fight against the virus. And it's very important to note, in the states with the highest case rates, daily vaccination rates have more than doubled. 8 states with the highest current case rates have seen an average increase of 171% in the number of people newly vaccinated each day over the past 3 weeks. This increase in vaccination rates in states that have been lagging is a positive trend. Americans are seeing the risk and impact of being unvaccinated and responding with action. And that's what it's going to take to get us out of this pandemic.
Good afternoon. Let's begin with an overview of the data. Because of what we now know about the Delta variant and infections in those who are vaccinated, we updated our recommendations, including recommending masks in public indoor settings in areas with substantial and high transmission. It is also the reason we continue to recommend universal indoor masking in K through 12 schools throughout the country so our children can safely get back to school and safely stay there. In all of this, there is still good news. Our vaccines are working to prevent severe illness, hospitalizations, and death. Vaccines are providing protection both for individuals and communities across the country. As I have said before, this remains a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Where the vast majority of spread is in this country is among those who are unvaccinated. I want to be clear. While vaccinated people can spread the virus if they get a breakthrough infection, the odds of them getting sick in the first place are far lower than those who are unvaccinated. And in fact, places with more vaccination generally have less disease. And I think it's worth reiterating that public health prevention strategies, including masks, continue to work while you're unvaccinated. Over the month of July, there were a total of 934 confirmed cases of COVID-19 linked to the outbreak in Barnstable County. With 73% of these infections in people who were vaccinated, there were only 7 hospitalizations and no deaths. Our vaccines did exactly what they were supposed to do, prevent severe disease, hospitalization, and death. Furthermore, as cases increased, local public health officials implemented a package of public health prevention strategies, including increased testing, contact tracing, and indoor mask wearing. And within 2 weeks, test positivity fell from a peak of 15.1% to 4.6%. Let me end by reiterating 3 things you need to know. First, our vaccines are working to prevent severe illness, hospitalization, and death. Second, masks will protect you and your family. And third, we need to keep our children safe and in school. Get everyone in your family over the age of 12 vaccinated, and please wear masks in school. Finally, we stand here with you, providing science and updated guidance in real time to keep you and your families safe.
Now, I explained to you many times over the years the CIA's program called Mockingbird. And if you ever heard a mockingbird, it copies the sounds around it. And this is what happens with the media. The media is controlled by the CIA. These things, these lies that you just heard, are being parroted on ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, and Fox News. Fox News is the same as every other mainstream media. There are only a few people like Tucker and Judge Jeanine. You know, there's only a few people on there, and they're controlled opposition, I can tell you that. So what you've been hearing from everywhere is CIA talking points. The Florida hospital that was supposed to be overrun, the AP, Associated Press, comes out and talks about, and it was on TV. I watched it on ABC, CBS, and NBC, and Fox News, where this Florida hospital was overrun by COVID patients. Overrun. So somebody went there. A guy went there. Now, this happened in the beginning. I saw this happen also at a different time. This guy went there. And he actually took pictures. First, he took pictures of the parking lot, where the doctors and nurses park, and then where the clients park. It's almost empty. Then he goes inside the hospital and starts taking pictures all through the hospital. I have all these pictures. They're going to be posted. So this is the standard lies that you've been hearing. I remember Kootenai County here. They're saying, well, we're hammered. We're hammered. We got so many COVID patients here. It's ridiculous. So I went to the ER. And I went in with my wife. Now, she had to go there because she had a stomach problem. And I went to the quote-unquote COVID ward. The COVID ward was the back end of the ER. And I said, how many people you got in there? And she said, 2. The nurse said, 2. 2 people. I said, that's it? She goes, yeah, that's it. So it's fraud. It's lies. It's the same crap that they've been pushing on us now for a couple years now. There is a report that came out. This is not bogus. This is real. This is National Library of Medicine, pubmed.ncbi.nlm.nih, National Institute of Health.gov. This is real. And it's a report that says a five-day course of ivermectin for the treatment of COVID-19 may reduce the duration of the illness. Now, this is real. This is no ifs, ands, or buts. And they mention numerous other reports. Ivermectin. You know where you get ivermectin? You go to North 40. You go to country store. You go to farm stores. And they sell ivermectin. It's a paste. Well, for humans, they put it in a capsule. And for horses and cows, it's a antiparasitic, and it kills parasites. Where this flu lives, where COVID, SARS-CoV-2 lives. I'll have this. You can go read this yourself. This isn't some kind of right-wing conspiracy, hogwash, blah, blah, blah. Speaking of hogwash, now that they've made $33 billion, billion dollars, Pfizer I'm talking about, they decided to hike the prices of the vaccines up 25%. Moderna and Pfizer. So they murdered thousands and thousands of people worldwide. And I mean, it's in the hundreds of thousands. But that's not good enough for them. Now they want 25% more. That's great. Isn't that smart? I'd do the same thing. I mean, hell, why not? Now we've got to go into the food department. Bacon may disappear in California. And there's reasons behind that. The idiots in California voted to make sure that pigs and calves and ducks and other edible critters are raised in a humane manner, which in their mind, humane means, you know, like 5-6 square feet per pig, or there's different things. You can read it yourself. But basically what it's saying is, basically, you're not going to be able to sell your products in California unless you can certify that your animals have been raised in a proper manner. So there's no company that's going to do that. So they said, you know what? Then we're just not going to sell you any more bacon. Bacon. Everything goes good with bacon, even vodka. Pilgrim's Pride. The U.S. grand jury indicts Pilgrim's Pride for chicken price fixing. Now, I'm just not smart enough to understand what the hell that's all about. So I'm sure somebody out there will read the article and go, oh, that's, well, they did this, and this. Okay. You know, I just look at the food ads. And I can tell you this. This time last year, when skinless, boneless chicken breasts were on sale, they would be like 99 cents a pound. And we would go out and buy a whole bunch of it. Now, I'm looking at it on sale, $1.99 a pound. McDonald's has announced that everybody's going to wear a mask. People that work there and all customers are going to be wearing masks. Yeah, that ain't going to work. This drought that we're having throughout the United States, that's basically weather wars and controlled, is causing some problems that people didn't think about. Like Hayden Lake here. Hayden Lake, big tourist trap, is toxic. In the 80s and 90s, they actually, U.S. Department of Agriculture sent out flyers that warned people, don't swim in the lake, don't eat the fish in the lake. If you do get wet, rinse yourself off with fresh water, wash your children if they play in the sand, right? So they did all of this, and now they're ignoring it. Everybody's ignoring it, so these tourists don't know about this stuff. But see, if that lake decided to suffer from a drought and start going down, like Salt Lake in Utah, is 9 feet below the lowest level it's ever been recorded. Well, that dries up the sand, which allows the toxins to now become airborne. There is a big, big worry right now, specifically for Salt Lake, because of high arsenic load. So as the water goes down, the arsenic that's been packed in the mud is now becoming loose. And this could be very, very dangerous. And arsenic's not just the only possibility of a toxic cloud. It's all over the United States. There's all different ones. So this is something to concern yourself with, especially if you live near a body of water. All right, now we got to get into the liberal psychosis.
If you lie to the government, they'll put you in prison. But when they lie to all of us, it's called being a politician. You think taking guns away, we'll save our kids from the killings. But your pro-choice abortion kills way more children. If America's so terrible and racist, it probably isn't safe to encourage immigration. Just saying, all the contradictions are embarrassing. You know who hates America the most? Americans. Trigger warnings used to be on TV for seizures, and now they're everywhere to protect millennials' feelings. He, she, his, him, hers, them, they. Screw a pronoun, cause everyone's a retard these days. I hear him preaching at the protest that hatred's the problem, but hating straight men, white folks, and Christians is common. Coca-Cola telling people they should be less white. They preach intolerance, but if you disagree, they fight. There's a race war here, elections based on fear. Black lives only matter once every 4 years. Soldiers died for this country, and every one of us benefits. Give welfare to the bums and forget about the veterans. Black folks and white folks divided by the news, but we are all the same. We are red, white, and blue. Ashamed to be American? Okay, that's cool. Cause honestly, we are all ashamed of you too.
Y'all are so fake, oh no. The forecast said that there'd be snowflakes, whoa. You can make us see it your way, no way. Gasoline and propane, more flames, oh no. No more snowflakes.
That city, Chicago, you know, they have a mayor that's a cross between Beetlejuice and a lizard. And again, I'm pretty certain it's a female. In July, 461 shootings. 461 shootings. Now, these are black guys shooting other black guys. Okay, most of them are gang members. Thing is, and this is what happens with these communists, it's the gun that did it. It's not the criminal that did it or the psychotic murderer that pulled the trigger. It's the gun that let the psychotic murderer pull the trigger. In Oregon, you know, they had their share of mass shootings. So lawyers in Oregon have decided, let's not sue the manufacturers of the guns. Let's sue the manufacturers of the magazines. Because the magazines are the evil, nasty things that do the killing. Now, if those mags were only 3 rounds, then these people wouldn't have been killed. That's sane. And then you go to the criminal country, Mexico. Mexico has decided they're going to sue all the gun makers in the United States for $10 billion in damages. Because it's not the criminal Mexicans that are shooting each other with the guns. It's the guns shooting each other with the guns. And this liberal psychosis has even worked its way into the Olympics.
Welcome to the 2021 Tokyo Olympics special report. At the first ever woke Olympics, viewership has never been lower, yet virtue signaling has never been higher. Oddly enough, it turns out the public doesn't want to watch people who hate their country represent their country. The game started off with a bang when the women's soccer team, instead of playing soccer, decided to kneel during the national anthem. They ended up losing in a complete shutout to Sweden. Megan Rapinoe, Victoria's Secret's most outraged spokesperson, led the way in her team's successful display of kneeling. They knelt in support of Marxist organization BLM. And as Marxism is used to usher in socialism, Megan's team went on to score the exact amount of goals that reflects the level of prosperity that socialism brings with it. 0. After the game, Rapinoe said they can build on this performance, optimistically predicting that if she can spend even more time being an activist for degenerate causes, the next time, her team will be able to score even less goals. Unfortunately, not all athletes competing for America hate America. Here you can see a number of proud Americans who were successful at the games, including this picture of what appears to be a group of cisgenders gathered around a hate symbol. Why are they gathered around a hate symbol? Because they're clearly racist. And on the note of proud Americans, First Lieutenant Amber English took home gold in shooting. We hope Americans can enjoy this success and take it in, as it's likely the last time that shooting will be included in the Olympic Games. Why? Because Supreme Leader Biden, who's protected by people with guns, wants to take your guns, disarming the population, even though it's your Second Amendment right to own guns. He's also trying to take away your First Amendment rights as well. And that's the kind of respect for the Constitution you want in a president. Someone who hates their country in charge of their country. Are woke athletes representing the U.S. starting to make a little bit of sense now? I'm getting word of breaking news. Women's weightlifting has just concluded, and we've got an exclusive interview with the winner. Over to you, JP.
Thank you, JP.
I'm here with Tiffany, winner of Women's Gold. Tiffany, what's this win mean to you?
Well, JP, this win means everything to me, and it proves that women can achieve anything that men can.
That adds up.
And this Olympic gold is a lifelong dream come true. When I was a boy, my dad would always say to me, "Son, one day you can win an Olympic medal if you just put your mind to it." This win is for you, Dad!
Now, Tiffany, you shattered the women's world record by 150 pounds. That's 40% more weight than any other woman has ever lifted. It's almost as if you've got superhuman abilities as a woman. What's your secret?
No secret. I mean, I'm not any different than any other woman out there. I clearly just wanted this win more.
Ha ha! Well, it sounds like it'd be uninclusive to question that. Back to you in the studio, JP.
What an inspiring tale of Olympic glory.
In the Olympics overall, China leads the way, followed by North Korea, with the U.S. closely behind in the communism tally. And with the left controlling all three branches of government, look for that to change as the U.S. charges forward into being completely absorbed by China. Concluding the Tokyo Olympics special report, normally, the Olympics are a two-week period every 4 years where people pretend to care about sports that they don't care about. Swimming, track and field, and gymnastics are fan favorites. But this time around, people are simply not caring about sports that they don't care about. And with people not paying attention to the Olympics, we as a nation can get back to not paying attention to the authoritarian takeover that's currently being attempted. Everything's fine, but new lockdowns and mandates are being announced daily to protect the tyrants from your bravery and to distract you from what they're really doing. Good night!
You know, I've got a category here called Democrat perversion. And what it is everything that's sexually perverse or psychotic is always promoted and performed by a Democrat. And I have dozens and dozens of things, everything from a couple dozen Disney workers indicted in child perversion sting ring, blah, blah, blah. Some psycho liberals are calling their 2-year-old children transgender. There's all of this crap. I'm not even going to get into it. I'm not going to waste my time with this psychosis. We know it's all Democrats. We know this is what they do. The whole intent is the destruction of the family unit and the United States. So let's get directly into Dimwit. We know that Dimwit is nothing other than a puppet, and he's a puppet for those that hate America. So what he does now is he just picked a Muslim as the United States International Religious Freedom Ambassador. A Muslim. The most hated and feared religion, if I can use that term, on earth. And he puts a Muslim in charge. He's very an intelligent man. Yeah, so in this infrastructure bill that Dimwit's putting forward, and again, he's not putting anything forward. He barely knows which tooth he just brushed. In the infrastructure bill, and you might even have heard about this, they're going to be looking at how to tax people on their driving. How on all cars there should be a meter installed so that you will, at the end of the year, pay a tax on every mile you drive. Now, in Texas, troopers can stop people for various things, including taillights out, you know, whatever. Well, the United States government, the feds, are suing Texas now because the state troopers have been checking them to see if they were legals or illegals. So they're suing them for that. They don't want them to do that. Something popped up, and I've been looking at this and wondering what the hell's going on. Since Dimwit took over the daycare center in Washington, D.C., we've been noticing different anomalies, such as he's being videotaped in the Oval Office sitting there talking, and in the background there is a parking lot with a dump truck in it. Or there's a video of him in the Oval Office sitting on a couch and Nancy Pelosi and some other commies sitting around there talking, and the walls don't meet in the corner. There, you'll have to come up with your own conjecture why, but it was discovered there is a duplicate White House, 100% duplicate, built on a military base. It's fake. It's a full duplicate White House. Now, it's built on a former military base, Fort McPherson, Atlanta, Georgia. You can see it. There's some pictures here, and this is on HalTurnerRadioShow.com. And those of you who want cutting-edge stuff, you're not going to see a lot of these things that he shows you anywhere else. Or if they do show up, they're weeks down the road. This is a full-scale replica of the White House. And it gives you some examples of what's going on here. I don't know. Is this where he's doing all of his work? Is this where he is being shown signing pages and doing stuff? This is where he's living? This is where they have Dimwit actually hiding? I don't know. This is something strange. Now, I have a new intro to the category government threat.
What are they trying to do?
That's the missing piece. But it's not hard to imagine. Driven not only by corporate greed, but a darker objective.
The takeover of America.
And then the world itself, by any means necessary, however violent, or cruel, or efficient. By severe drought, brought on by weather wars, conducted secretly using aerial contaminants and high-altitude electromagnetic waves. In a state of perpetual war, to create problem, reaction, solution scenarios to distract, enrage, and enslave American citizens at home. With tools like the Patriot Act and the National Defense Authorization Act, which abridge the Constitution in the name of national security. The militarization of police forces in cities across the U.S. The building of prison camps by the Federal Emergency Management Agency with no stated purpose. The corporate takeover of food and agriculture, pharmaceuticals and healthcare, even the military in clandestine agendas to fatten, dull, sicken, and control a populace already consumed by consumerism.
And I encourage you all to go shopping more.
A government that taps your phone, collects your data, and monitors your whereabouts with impunity. A government preparing to use that data against you when it strikes and the final takeover begins.
The takeover of America.
By a well-oiled and well-armed multinational group of elites that will cull, kill, and subjugate.
That's a clip from the X-Files. Jeez, is this almost as if they thought about it? Well, we're under government threat, and that means everything goes. In the Philippines, a local government has declared that unvaccinated people are not allowed to even leave their houses. They're not allowed to go shopping. They're not allowed to go to the doctor. They're not allowed to go to the hospital. They're just allowed to stay in home and die. So let's see how many of them do that. I know in the United States, all the Democrats would. The Border Patrol, and we know this, and this is one of the things that we've been watching and everybody's been watching and everybody's complaining about, and it's never changing. They're releasing COVID-positive illegals into America. This is known. They've already categorized 7,000 of them that were sick and tested positive. Of course, it's a bogus test, but that's irrelevant. They're sick and they're being released into the United States. And basically what the Border Patrol does is he takes them over to a couple fraudulent organizations who give them IDs and some money and puts them on a bus and sends them out all over the United States. I'm astounded. I am literally astounded. If this was occurring in any country than the United States, if this was occurring in France, in Germany, in Italy, in Greece, there would be thousands of people blocking the buses from moving. Thousands of them. Not here. Nope. Got Monday night football. Got beer. Got free government money. Don't have to pay your rent either. So they don't pay attention to a damn thing that's going on. The White House has formed an influencer army. I don't know, whatever. Influencer is a human that's on TikTok or YouTube or some other social media that convinces people to buy crap and convinces them, look at how beautiful I am. Look at this lipstick. It makes me look beautiful. And it's only $49.95 at Woolworths right now. Okay, that's an influencer. They're going to convince young people to get vaccinated. You know, when all the smoke clears in a couple years, I wonder how they're going to justify the massive amounts of cardiac arrests and deaths that are occurring to everyone from the age of 12 on up. Oh, and by the way, the U.S. government wants to authorize vaccinations for children from birth to 12 now. The New York Times come out and said that non-citizens should be able to vote anywhere in the United States. So criminal alien pops his butt inside this country, he should be able to vote. It's ridiculous that criminal aliens shouldn't be able to vote. You know, the election audits that are occurring in some of the various countries, like Arizona, the attorney general we have, a communist, Merrick Garland, has come out and he's threatened them. He said, you know, what you're doing could be possibly a violation of the Civil Rights Act. Because now I'm going to paraphrase. Basically, the only people who would cheat would be blacks. And blacks are too stupid to cheat properly, so we don't want you catching them. So if you did catch them cheating, well, that would be a violation of the Civil Rights Act. One of these commies has come out and said that he proposed an amendment to the Constitution of the United States to abolish the Electoral College and to provide for the direct election of the President and Vice President of the United States. And he's a typical Jewish communist, Steve Cohen, sponsor. He sponsored this. Tennessee's 9th Congressional District. He has 8 co-sponsors. These are other communists that have decided to sign on this bill. Oh, let me read the names to you so maybe you recognize them. Steve Cohen, Zoe Lofgren, Julia Brownlee, Jim Cooper, Peter DeFazio, Anna Eshoo, Adriano Espiolot. I probably didn't pronounce that right. John Garamondi, Janice Schakowsky. I presume they're all trying to make a name for themselves because most of their names I couldn't pronounce properly. There's an article titled, Coming Soon, a No-Buy List for Conservatives and Other Hate Groups. Well, it's already been performed on me. Yeah, Survival Enterprises, our ability to take charges was canceled a couple years ago. I was part of a test to see if it could destroy a business. Well, mine it didn't, because we ended up, if we couldn't take credit cards or debit cards, well, we could take checks over the phone. We actually pay for a program that allows us to do that through our bank. So it's sad to say that they're going to be pulling this more and more, and other groups besides credit card companies are going to be involved in it, including PayPal and Venmo and other groups. If you decide to buy something from an organization that these groups don't agree with, they'll cancel your charge. And if you continue to try to buy things, I don't know, maybe you're trying to buy a gun, and your card for that organization. I have a PayPal credit card, so if I was, say I want to buy a gun, and I go to buy a gun, and I've got maybe an $8,000, $10,000 limit on my credit card from PayPal, and I'm buying a $500 gun, and it says declined, and I call them up and say, what the hell do you mean declined? I got an $8,000 limit, $10,000 limit. What do you mean declined? Well, we're not authorized to allow you to use your credit card to purchase things that are on our restricted list. Get ready for it. It's coming. Fast and hard. Now, before we get into How to Become a Tyrant Part 2, I got to talk to you about something right now, and it's not going to have a lot of time, but I would really appreciate it if you paid some attention. This is, food is becoming short in many areas of the world, and I'm not exaggerating, and if you did any research, you see the same thing. It's going to get worse. You need to be able to buy food and store it properly so that you can have it later on when it's not available. I'm going to talk to you today about a food saver vacuum packer. This is a piece of equipment you can buy at Walmart. You can buy at Cabela's. You can buy at Costco. You can buy it all over the place. You can buy it on eBay. It's called a food saver. It's a vacuum packer. It's a little, it's probably about a foot and a half long. And the top, the lid folds back, and you take a pouch that you've filled with food, and you lay it in there in a certain manner, close the lid, latch it, and push a button, and it vacuum packs it, and then seals it, little heat strip. To give you an example of how this works, I mentioned boneless, skinless chicken breasts. So they come out on sale. I go out and buy 20 to 30 pounds, because we eat a lot of chicken, not much beef. Well, you cannot vacuum pack wet foods. So when you get something like that, when you get beef, chicken, pork, fish, shrimp, I don't care, anything that's frozen or in its raw state, and you want to vacuum pack it to store it for later on, you have to freeze it first. So we take these chicken breasts, take two of them, because that's my wife and me, and I wrap them in cellophane and put them in a freezer. Once they're frozen, then they can vacuum pack perfectly. Now, there's two things that you can use for vacuum packing. First, you already know the equipment. It's called a food saver, and you can, there's a dozen different models. You figure out which one you like the best and get it. You get pouches, pre-made pouches. They're sealed on three sides, and you get pint, quart, gallon, give or take. You can buy them in most stores, but the cheapest way to get them is on eBay. And remember this. This is food saver pouches or food saver bags, or and you have to do a search, food saver gallon, food saver quart, food saver whatever. You put whatever you're going to vacuum pack in it, you put it in the food saver, seal, you close it, vacuum pack it, and then you seal it. So all right, you can do in chicken breast, good, you put them in, put whatever you want in this pouch, vacuum pack it, seal it, then you put it in the freezer. Now normally chicken breast, any meats, if you wrap them up good and stick them in the freezer, they're good for 6 months, 3 months, 6 months, and then they start freezer burning. Freezer burning desiccates the product. It starts destroying it. When you vacuum pack meats, that stuff is good 2, 3, 4 years down the road. I know this for a fact. I've done it. So you can do the same thing to beef, to chicken, to pork, to fish. All right, now these are plastic. These are plastic bags, right? They can get a hole poked in them. So be aware of that. Like if you got T-bone steaks or any kind of steak with these bones sticking up, they're going to poke a hole. And then you're going to get pissed off because it's not going to hold seal. So break off the tips. Use extra cellophane wrapping around it to protect it. And then pay attention. Now what I do is I have a Rubbermaid tub sitting alongside of me as I'm vacuum packing stuff. And I take them and I put these things in this tub. See, I'm going to use that tub to carry them out into the freezer. But it'll be about 5 to 10 minutes before I'm done with all the vacuum packing for that run. So I will have time to look over and see if any of them have lost their seal. And it doesn't have to be a sharp bone. Sometimes these pouches have a little hole, micro hole in them already. Or we vacuum packed rice. And I don't know how, but it would break a seal. So I'd simply take that bag that the seal broke, put the whole damn thing in a new bag, and then vacuum pack that. Okay, it adds a level of protection to it. You can vacuum pack anything. Macaroni and cheese. Now, you know, you can get mac and cheese. You can get rice-a-roni. You can get all of these boxed stuff. Cardboard boxes. I don't recommend taking the cardboard box and putting it in there and vacuum packing the whole thing, because the cardboard deteriorates faster than the other stuff does, and you don't need the contaminants, especially from the ink and stuff. So what I do is this. Let's say I'm going to vacuum pack rice-a-roni. I use a little pint bags, and I will cut the instructions off the box, pour the mixture in there, in the bag, slip the instructions in there, and then vacuum pack it. And you can do the same thing with macaroni and cheese or anything else like that. You know, I've tried vacuum packing pasta. Well, it works good on elbow macaroni, but on spaghetti, it just crushes it to nothing. So common sense is really important in this whole thing. Now, I mentioned pouches. There's also rolls of the plastic that you can buy. These rolls will be either 6 inches wide or 12 inches wide. And you seal the bottom of it. You unroll it the length you want. And then you trim it, you cut it with a knife, and then you put whatever you want in there, and you're making your own pouch, in other words. A roll is sealed on two sides. It's not sealed on the end. But that's with food. And there's many different types of food that you can vacuum pack. Do not think that just because it's vacuum packed, it's going to store in your pantry. A lot of food will go bad. One of my listeners years ago used to work for a very famous meat snack company. And he sent me 100 pounds of beef jerky and food sticks, and it was really cool. Really, it was so nice. I loved it. It was great. I vacuum packed them all, and I stuck them in a freezer, and I drew from them the next 3 to 6 months. And after about 6 months, I started looking at them, and they were growing mold. Problem is this: the seasoning that's used can tend to even in a vacuum start to go bad. So you've got to pay attention to that. You really have to rotate your foods in the freezer just as well as you do in your canned goods. You can do beans, you can do rice, you can do all of this stuff. You can package it in 5-pound bags, you can package it in single-serving pouches, you can do whatever you want, all right? The idea is to make it last longer. That way you can buy more and store it for a rainy day, which is coming hard and fast. Now, it's not just food that you can do this to. You can store matches. You can store clothing. I can take a week's worth of clothes and stick them in one of these pouches, or stick them, make my own long pouch from the roll and vacuum pack it, and it weighs what the clothes weigh, but it's only like a couple inches thick. So you can use some imagination. I also use this. I did an experiment some years ago, and I took a brand new Marlin 22 rifle, and I wrapped it in a gun sock. And this is to protect the pouch from the pokey parts of the rifle. Now, I cleaned the rifle and I oiled it, put it in this gun sock. And using the roll, I made about a 3.5-foot long pouch. I slipped the buttstock of the gun down into the pouch. And on the other end, I vacuum packed it. Took a little bit, but I vacuum packed it sealed. Then I folded the flaps over on the sides, the excess pouch, and I taped it all the way up to the top of the gun, and then I stuck it in a wall in my garage. About 10 years later, we got the gun out, opened it up, and it was like brand new. So that's something else that you can do. You can take silver and you can vacuum pack it. Silver, gold, knives, and obviously you'll wrap the knife up to where the little pokey edge won't get out. But anything that you can imagine, you can vacuum pack. You just have to remember the concepts that pokey edges are going to poke through the plastic and you're going to lose your vacuum. So make sure whatever you put in there is not going to poke a hole through the damn thing, because that would really upset you. I'm telling you, I've had people vacuum pack $1,000 worth of silver to keep it from oxidizing. And then they just laid it on the shelf and never checked it. It had ended up opening up. I don't know how, neither did they. But where the hole was, the bunch of silver all around there had been oxidized. And these were collectible. So that kind of upset him. So you can use your imagination. You can vacuum pack anything you want. The idea here is you can extend the shelf life of food. So you can buy more when it's on sale. Look at your food ads. Ours come out here on Wednesday. And they're getting sparse. They're getting to where the normal things that were on sale are no longer being put on sale because the stores literally can't get them. So you can go on eBay. And this is what I do. I go on eBay and I look up different models. Now, I know what different models are. I know the model numbers. And I look them up and I'll buy them for a nickel on a dollar. And go to yard sales. People don't know what the hell they have. I went to a yard sale last year. There was a Food Saver and I forgot the model number. But it was a very simple one, but it was very powerful. And it cost in the store about $100, and this guy wanted $20 for it. So I looked at it, and I said, this looks like it's never been used. He goes, well, that's not all of it. I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, the rest is in the box below the table. And I looked down there. Now, there's canisters you can get to vacuum pack stuff in. We keep our medicine in a canister. This is like a 2-quart canister with a round lid on top. And you put stuff in there. You could put food in there. You could put flour in there. You could put macaroni in there. You could do whatever you want. And then you have an adapter, which is goes on top of the Food Saver. It's a tube. It's a pharmaceutical tube. And then it's a little round cap. And you set that on top of different size canisters, and it'll pull a vacuum in the canister. In fact, there's an adapter to mason jars. Years ago, we bought like 50 pounds of walnuts. Now, you're not supposed to be able to store walnuts. And this was an experiment. I put them in mason jars, and I vacuum packed them. You put the lid on, put the cap on, and then vacuum pack it, and then pull the adapter off, put the tightener on, the seal on the cap of the mason jar, and then put it away. Well, we had the walnuts vacuum packed for over 15 years, and I ate the last of them all last year, and they were just as crunchy as the day that we put them in there. Normally, you can't store nuts because of the oils in them, but when you vacuum pack them, they don't oxidize. In this box was a half a dozen of these different canisters and about six rolls of the pouch. So, yeah, I gave them $20 for it.
Look in your local throwaway papers, like up here it's the Nicholsworth and other places, Penny Saver, the Inch Pincher, whatever you want. Look in those papers. Sometimes people have the Food Saver on sale there, or the rolls of plastic that you can make into bags or bags. And, you know, just pay attention to that. Look on Craigslist. So to recap here for you, the Food Saver vacuum packer can pack fresh meat, but you have to wrap it first in cellophane, freeze it, and then you can pack it. And that's beef, chicken, turkey, fish, snails, lobster, I don't care. I've vacuum packed lobster before many times. You have to wrap them good because they got little pokey things in the edges of their shells. You can vacuum pack clothes. You can vacuum pack survival goods. You can vacuum pack firearms. You can vacuum pack damn near anything you can imagine. I don't recommend powders in the bags. I don't recommend that in the bags at all, because the powder can get sucked into the vacuum machinery and it'll literally burn it out after a while. So let your imagination be your guide. You can use this in all kinds of different things, storing all kinds of different things. I had a guy come in and he brought one of the ham radios that he bought, and he said this will be good 100 years from now. He wrapped it in cellophane really good and included also spare battery, the elongated battery, another antenna, just a bunch of other stuff in there. And then he vacuum packed it, and then he put the date on it, on the bag. Now, here's something else to think about as well. You can vacuum pack meats. You can also vacuum pack dehydrated vegetables, and then you don't need to refrigerate. Like, I did a whole bunch of green onions, and I have a Excelsior dehydrator, and then I vacuum packed them into pouches. I write the date on there. And if you can't tell what's in it, write what's in it too. The black indelible felt pen, I write the date on there. It's like when you're packing up 5-gallon buckets of food, you have to write what's in it and the date on there. Now, if it's beef, sometimes you can't tell the different cuts. So my wife will take the black felt pen and she will write what cut this is in here. It could be a round steak, it could be pork chops, it could be tri-tip, whatever. She'll write that on there so she can at least tell what it is. Same thing with chicken parts. Sometimes it's a little difficult to tell if these are cut up thighs or breasts. So she just writes on there, and that's fine. So again, let your imagination be your guide. You can vacuum pack anything. Just remember, you don't want to poke a hole in the pouch. And I think that you got probably a 1% chance of the pouch or the roll being bad anyway, and you might have a few little microscopic holes in there. So that's why I keep that rubber tub next to me when I'm vacuum packing all of this stuff, okay? And next week, I'll try and tell you about storing and repackaging dried goods. And generally, you'd be doing that in Mylar bags and then putting the Mylar bags in a 5-gallon bucket. Now, I've used the Food Saver with the mason jar lid adapter tube. So I'll explain all of that again so that you folks will understand it next week. I've done this many times and talked about the Food Saver and packaging food, and this is vital. I want it right at the tip of your mind so that you can figure out for yourself. We're getting right down to the point where it's going to be too late. There are people right now in England that are finding out it's too late. A guy sent me an email yesterday with a video in it. And now if you go into Office Depot or Staples or someplace like that and you want to get yourself a flash drive or a little tiny mini hard drive or something, that little thing that's like 3 inches by 3 inches is packaged in a plastic clamshell container that's probably about 6 inches wide and 8 inches tall. And it's see-through. And the intent is, well, nobody's going to steal that. It's too big. He had a video of him going into a supermarket, and all he wanted was a steak for dinner. And here are the steaks packaged in these big plastic containers, these security containers, with a GPS tracking thing on it. And he's looking at that going, what the hell is this? there is a lot of things that are happening, and you've heard the Ice Age farmer talk about it, you've heard me talk about it, you've heard Alex Jones, Jeff Rentz, Steve Quayle, you've heard a lot of people talk about it. They're cutting down on your ability to get food, and they're going to be wanting to track every single thing you buy. That's why when I go shopping, I use cash. If you use a loyalty card that's attached to your real name, which I don't, then the government's going to know what you bought. If you go into a store, and like Fred Meyer's here, a Kroger store, and you have a loyalty card for Fred Meyer's, and you buy 50 pounds of apricots, and you use your card, because that's how you get a discount, right? You use that card, the data is given to the Department of Homeland Security, and it depends on the agreement the organization has with DHS. They're going to give all that data either weekly, biweekly, or monthly. And the government uses that information, and it is very simple. It goes right into your file. So Kirk just bought 50 pounds of apricots. He also bought 5 rolls of Food Saver vacuum packing bags. You see what I mean? And it's all this data goes together, and then they go, well, if you add 2 plus 2 plus 2 plus 2, looks like Kurt is vacuum packing a lot of food and storing it. So he's on list number 1 for when we want to confiscate stored foods. I'm not saying that's real. It probably is, because I am on the red list. I've been doing this for about 25-something years now. So I'm very well known for storing food and teaching people how to store food. But the key is this, that you want to, again, we're going back to the look at your food ads. Look at your food ads and find stuff that you buy that can store. And that you don't have to get stuff that you can vacuum pack. You know, you can easily buy tuna. Tuna can go on sale. Peanut butter can go on sale. Jelly can go on sale. Packaged, all kinds of stuff can go on sale. Everybody's different in different parts of the United States. I don't know what you eat. You don't know everything I eat. You can guess macaroni and cheese and peanut butter and tuna. But right now, we're going to get into part 2 of how to become a tyrant. And to let you know, this comes directly from Netflix. And you can go there. Now, I had to edit it down for the radio because they have a lot of pictures. They have a lot of printing on the screen that comes through and sound effects. And I wanted to get as many of those out as I could. So this is a 3-part series on the radio. It's 6 parts on Netflix. So go ahead and I'll talk to you when it's over.
Dear Tyrant, now that you've vanquished your enemies inside the government, your regime should be settling in for the long haul. But there's another group that can pose a bigger threat to your rule. And it's much harder to control. Your adoring countrymen. So how can you keep the masses on your side through thick and thin? The playbook offers one essential ingredient.
Machiavelli poses the question, is it better for a ruler to be feared or loved? You should rely on fear, because when people fear you, you are in control of them.
It gets better. Play your cards right and you'll find that terror can have an unexpected benefit, winning your people's heart. Which brings us to Uganda to meet legendary tyrant Idi Amin Dada. Amin's path through the playbook made violence and terror the guiding principles of his regime.
Toughness is good because the people respect you.
Follow his example and learn how to put your own dark side to work. During Idi Amin's 8-year reign, as many as 300,000 Ugandans disappeared or were killed, often on his direct orders.
He has turned Africa into a human slaughterhouse.
Before diving into how Amin ruled over this former British colony, here's what you need to know about how he got the job in the first place.
Around 1946, Amin joins what was called the King's African Rifle, which was actually used to suppress insurrection and rebellion in African countries.
He had been very involved in situations of violence, and instead of being punished for using excessive force, Amin was repeatedly promoted.
He was able to recruit people that were loyal to him into the army, and he started recruiting a lot of people that came from his own ethnic group, the Kakwa, from the southwestern part of Uganda. President Milton Obote was warned by the departing governor. Idi Amin was a ticking time bomb. Obote knew at some point he would have to deal with Idi Amin.
Not too long later, in 1971, Amin did seize power from Obote and ousted him in a military coup.
I will exercise the function of the head of
government, so help me God.
And so began a new era full of promise.
The media embraced him. They coined nicknames like Big Daddy, or he was called the Gentle Giant.
But gaining power in a coup meant that Amin had to wipe out his enemies to secure his rule. How do you do that without turning off your fans at home and around the world? Playbook suggests a little sleight of hand. Setting up a new regime is hard work, and it's not always pretty. Too much attention to the unsavory details can really cramp a tyrant's style.
Uganda is very peaceful, and Uganda does not violate any human rights.
That's why, thanks to the playbook, top tyrants know the value of a good cover-up. As word of Nazi atrocities began to spread during World War II, Hitler invited the Red Cross to tour the Theresienstadt concentration camp, which they disguised as a model ghetto, full of only healthy residents, with its own bank, Jewish-run businesses, and sports leagues. When Joseph Stalin's agricultural policies led to millions of deaths by starvation in the Ukraine, he used disinformation, censorship, and friendly reporters to keep the truth from emerging. Pol Pot covered up evidence of his genocide in Cambodia that killed up to 2 million people, saying he and the Khmer Rouge were framed by the Vietnamese. Believe it or not, it wasn't long before Uganda's gentle giant needed to put this tactic into action.
Idi Amin had a very charming personality, but no denying that this is a killer. He unleashed his killing the very minute he seized power.
6 months into Amin's regime, there started to be allegations that there were massacres in the barracks, particularly soldiers who were members of the ethnic groups that were closely linked to the former president, Milton Obote.
People were killed out in one of the forests outside Kampala. They were buried in one of the forests, or indeed sometimes dumped into the Nile River.
Rumors of the massacres begin to spread, so American reporter Nicholas Stroh decides to investigate, along with his friend Robert Seidel, a professor at a local university. Stroh and Seidel drive to the scene of the alleged crime, a rural barracks about 170 miles southwest of the capital, Kampala. And after 2 days, they seemingly disappear. Weeks pass with no signs of the men. Amin meets with Stroh's wife to reassure her that he'll leave no stone unturned to discover what happened. But it takes months for him to open an investigation. Then a Ugandan army lieutenant escapes to Tanzania with a brutal story to tell. He informs police there that the two Americans were attacked by Amin's officers and hacked to death, their bodies burned and dropped into a watery grave. Crime allegedly involved high-ranking officials in the government. But Amin closes the case without any charges. Another playbook success story? Not exactly. The scandal turns the true nature of Amin's regime from rumor into front page news around the world.
The international reporting shifts as it becomes more obvious that Amin's government is an exceptionally brutal one.
But really, who needs the international community? What matters is that your people stay loyal. And the playbook has the perfect tactic to keep them in line. Every good tyrant understands that their nation is made up of human beings with emotions. And emotions can be hacked.
Scapegoating is one of the most effective tactics.
Blame somebody else for the ills that the general masses are facing. And that is how you earn the trust and the support and the legitimacy from the masses.
There are many examples of this.
Joseph Stalin blamed wealthy farmers, called kulaks, for hoarding riches during the 1930s amid the Soviet Union's lagging economy. Muammar Gaddafi passed a special law to confiscate assets from Libya's ethnic Italians, who once ruled over the country, then expelled them on what became known as the Day of Vengeance. And then, of course, there's Adolf Hitler, who built his entire movement from day one around scapegoating and persecuting Jews. But when Amin unleashes this tactic, he has a different purpose in mind.
Things were economically very difficult, and Amin was trying to come up with strategies to appease the nation.
So he could demonstrate that he was, in fact, a legitimate and important leader. And so he needed to find a new group of individuals to target, and that was the Asians.
There were about 100,000 Asian Ugandans, mostly Indians from the Indian subcontinent. The British had dropped them during the colonial era, mostly to build the railroad, and they never went back.
The Asian community, 80,000 out of a population of 10 million, they own
nearly all the large shops and businesses.
A lot of the Ugandans felt resentment toward the Asians. They looked around and they saw Asian businessmen, and they thought, this is our country. There should be Africans running these shops.
From experience, we've discovered that Asians are very, very shrewd, and they've been exploiting this country for a very, very long time.
When Amin came into power, there was great jubilation amongst the Indian population of Uganda. And Amin used to say himself that he had liberated these Indians, which the British had disenfranchised.
But student of the playbook that he is, Amin decides to change his tune.
Toward the end of 1971, Amin holds a press conference in which he describes how the Asian community was against black Ugandans, regarding them as being less civilized than them.
But then the kinder, gentler Amin seemingly reemerges. Amin invites Asian community leaders to a meeting to help clear up any misunderstandings.
A who's who of Ugandan VIPs attend the conference, along with international media. The mood is hopeful until His Excellency the President arrives. Along with his top military brass, Amin launches into an attack on the Asian community, accuses them of tax evasion, funneling money out of the country, and discriminating against black Ugandans in business. In other words, economic and cultural treason. Amin's speech fuels a wave of anti-Asian propaganda, hate speech, and violence.
By creating these divisions, not only is Amin as the tyrant responsible for breaking the bonds of trust within the larger society, he's also unifying his support base, which is predominantly the black Ugandan population.
Now that you've got your scapegoats off balance, you might think you can do with them whatever you choose, but it's not always so simple, at least not yet. Even tyrannical societies have guardrails, otherwise known as laws. You need to knock them down. One of the pleasures of becoming absolute ruler, you rarely hear the word no. But destroying all obstacles to your tyrannical whims takes work.
Existing legal institutions can be a barrier to political leaders. And what do? They dismantle them.
The idea is to weaken all of the institutions and the guardrails that serve as a check on your power.
And once those guardrails are down, you're free to turn the law against your scapegoat. That's something any tyrant can get behind.
Idi Amin was able to control the government, the administration, and he was able to control the economic structure.
The tactics are used in sport by knocking out people are used in politics also.
But the only institution Idi Amin failed to penetrate was the judiciary. So he suspended part of the constitution. He gave himself power to pass decrees to accomplish what he wanted.
Sideline those pesky judges, and your playing field opens wide. For Amin, it triggers the next phase of his scapegoating operation. One morning while visiting the town of Soroti in eastern Uganda, Amin rises before dawn and drives himself to the local radio station. There, he addresses the nation.
He said, "Last night, I had a dream that the Asians were milking the cow, but they were not feeding it. And therefore, I think that we should get rid of the Asians."
I want to see that the whole Kampala Strip is not full of Indians.
Would you like to get all Asians out, really, sir?
Yes, they must go to their country.
Uganda's Asian community were given 3 months to pack up their businesses, leave the country.
Therefore, they must sell everything they have between now and the 90 days from Monday.
I was there in Uganda, and I was a teaching assistant at the university, and the general feeling amongst those I knew in the Asian community, it was that this was a bombast.
Asian leaders appeal to Uganda's courts for protection, but it's no use.
Many of the Asians who'd been in Uganda were born there. Their families had been in Uganda for generations, and so they had nowhere to go.
People left their car at the airport, left keys in the car. Nobody could figure out what was happening to them. I mean, imagine in a country where you had made your whole life in your several generations, you're leaving and there was not a single person to say goodbye.
Well, it wasn't a disaster for everyone. Once you've cast off your chosen scapegoats, it's time to reap the rewards.
When the entire Asian population was kicked out, there was some celebration in the population in Uganda. Idi Amin was able to take those businesses that had been owned by the Asians and awarding it to Africans.
It's good for them to go. Why? They have sacked us enough.
It was a popular move. It in some ways resonated very deeply with the demands of the vast majority of people. So it was popular. Whether it was successful, that's a different question.
After the Asian expulsion, there was a massive economic crisis. The people who had received the shops that were Asian property didn't have the skills. They didn't know how to manage economic enterprises.
The shortage of all sorts of commodities resulted in mass inflation, and many parts of the economy collapsed.
So maybe terrorizing one small group won't solve all your problems. As you can see, it can actually create more headaches. But don't blame the playbook. It's the people who've let you down. So before they start complaining about you, give them a good reason to keep their mouth shut.
Torture. Torture is a very good way to deter people from opposing you.
It's better than killing, because the person's kept alive. You can trap them, imprison them, pin them down, and exert raw violence against them. Tyrants love this.
They certainly do. In Cambodia, Pol Pot's Khmer Rouge used a wide array of torture techniques, including waterboarding, electric shock, and even covering people in scorpions to force confessions. North Korea's Ministry of State Security uses sleep deprivation and the pigeon, a stress position which over time forces the victim's backbone out of the body. While Joseph Stalin's NKVD favored the classic Russian strappado technique, which involves tying the victim's hands behind their back, then suspending them in the air.
As a result of the Asian expulsion, it was a time of increased smuggling. It was a time of economic chaos.
Nothing like a bad economy to stir up opposition to your rule. So to keep the chaos in check, Amin relied on his main torture squad, the State Research Bureau, whose agents were infamous for their viciousness and their fashion sense.
Everybody who saw these agents knew who they were, because they would wear bell-bottom trousers, dark glasses, flowered shirts, you know, it kind of had this 1970s vibe.
But despite their cool threads, these are probably not guys you'd want to party with.
Some would be literally whisked off of the street. They'd be pulled from a restaurant that they'd be sitting at, bundled into the trunk of a car and driven away, never to be seen again.
But everyone knew where they'd gone.
Amin had a large number of torture chambers. One of the most infamous was the headquarters of the State Research Center, which was located right in the middle of Kampala. The French embassy was actually right next door, and people working in the embassy would recount being able to hear screams.
The SRB building is famous for the terrible things that happened within its walls. Ordinary innocent people were tortured and killed.
But Amin and his henchmen always made sure that they let a couple people escape so that they could tell the story.
I also visited a place where they smash heads with a hammer.
Amin was very careful about cultivating rumors in a way that would keep people afraid. And so the result is that ordinary citizens never knew who they could trust, and so they weren't able to mount opposition against the state.
You'd think ruling through terror would push your people away, but as all tyrants know, that's not how this works.
We're not great at distinguishing fear from a more generalized feeling of arousal. And in the dictatorship, that could actually be channeled into thinking that that heightened sense of emotion is a feeling that you're feeling for the dictator themselves.
And that feeling can seem a lot like love.
It's not unlike an abusive relationship, such as in a family or in a gang or in a cult. They actually come to align themselves psychologically with the oppressor.
But there are always going to be a few holdouts who resist your terrible charms. Like this man, Janani Luwum, Anglican Archbishop of Uganda, Rwanda, Burundi, and Zaire, and one of the most powerful Christians in East Africa.
Luwum was well regarded by almost everyone. Over the course of his archbishopric, he was increasingly obliged to speak against the violence of his time. He had written a letter decrying the violence. It was enough for President Amin to see the archbishop as a threat.
So Amin points his finger back at the archbishop.
Amin accused him along with two cabinet ministers, of plotting to overthrow the government. It was said that the archbishop was stockpiling weapons in anticipation of an Anglican uprising. The next day, the two cabinet ministers and the archbishop are found in a wrecked car. Ostensibly, they've lost their lives in an auto accident.
But witnesses tell a different story of what happened. Apparently, Luom and his wife were attending a gathering at Amin's residence when the president requested a private meeting. Amin accused Luom of treason and demanded he sign a fake confession. Luom refused and was taken into custody. Inside the State Research Bureau, Luom was brutally beaten and threatened with worse if he didn't confess his crimes against the regime. But Luom did not bend. That night, Luom received a visitor. Amin encouraged the archbishop to reconsider, but Luom simply prayed for God's mercy on Uganda and its leaders. But mercy was not on Idi Amin's agenda.
His body was buried the next morning. It was never subject to an official examination report, but it's plain that he was shot, his bones were broken, and other injuries were done to him.
Maybe there is such a thing as going too far?
The archbishop's murder kind of solidifies sentiment that Amin's government needed to go.
But when your back is against the wall and all hope seems lost, the playbook has an ace in the hole that can still turn your fortunes around. War. What is it good for? As a tyrant, quite a bit. Especially when you're in a jam, like Idi Amin was in 1978.
Tyrants always go to war. And the reason is there's always a point when their domestic support seems to be a little fragile. And so what they do then is find a foreign enemy to marshal the country against.
Amin absolutely used the threat of foreign invasion and foreign opposition as a kind of provocation that could inspire Ugandans' loyalty and self-sacrifice.
Let's see how that worked out.
In 1978, units of the Uganda army crossed the border in the south of Uganda and invaded Tanzania.
He had no legitimate reason to invade Tanzania, except as a diversion.
And to settle some old scores.
Tanzania had maintained a close relationship with Milton Obote all these years.
Now is the time for Ugandans to overthrow the regime of death.
And Amin obviously did not like that.
Needless to say, if you're going to make this tactic work, you need an army that's up to the task.
All these years, Amin's army had sophisticated weapons. But in reality, his soldiers had never fought against armed opposition. All they had done was met brutality against unarmed Ugandans.
Field Marshal Amin started it with a territorial claim on my country.
And Tanzania now had the legitimate excuse to actually invade Uganda.
That was probably not what Amin had in mind when he started all this.
By this point, Amin's army, the Uganda army, was completely out of control. The Tanzanian people's army was much more organized.
Amin's army collapsed very quickly.
Amin is in Arua, and I'm going there.
You're going there?
Yes.
When will you be in Arua?
I don't know. He was walking.
Idi Amin was still in the country with a mobile radio and still communicating and still claiming that he was still in power and urging the population, which he had brutalized for the last 9 years, to actually stand up and fight on his behalf. Which was utter nonsense, of course.
Nothing less intimidating than a loser on the run. So take note, when you decide to go to war, make sure you pick a fight you can win.
And then eventually he flies himself out of the country to Saudi Arabia, where he lives in exile for the rest of his life.
The demise of Idi Amin's regime holds an important lesson. Just because you have a playbook to work from doesn't mean your success is guaranteed. To make sure your rule endures, you need an even grander vision and the discipline to see it through. Take a page from a man who dominated all aspects of his nation's day-to-day life, including the most basic concept of all, the truth. What is truth?
I do solemnly swear.
As children, we learn that some facts are beyond dispute. But if you're a tyrant operating in a chaotic world, the truth is often inconvenient.
Truth is a problem for an authoritarian or strong man because truth invites debate. Truth suggests that we can question the stories that we're being given.
Few tyrants fought the war on truth as relentlessly as this man, Joseph Stalin, who used propaganda, disinformation, and other clever tricks to maintain total control over the vast Soviet Union.
Stalin gave people the foundation of their reality. It's very simple. If it preserves the interests of the revolution, it is true.
By mastering the playbook, Stalin didn't just control his people's lives, he controlled their minds. During Stalin's three-decade reign over the Soviet Union, he crushed all institutions that dared challenge the power of the state. To understand how he pulled that off, you first need to know some key facts about the man himself.
Stalin was born Yosef Jugashvili in a small Georgian town, Gori, on the periphery of the Russian Empire. Later in life, he decides to take the name Stalin. Stalin comes from the Russian word stal, which means steel.
In his early 20s, Stalin joined up with the Bolsheviks, Marxist rebels looking to overthrow the Russian government.
They engaged in violence. Stalin himself was the leader of a small terrorist gang.
Stalin is arrested multiple times and sent to Siberia, but he escapes and rejoins the cause.
Those who survived hardened. They became tough.
Stalin got Lenin's attention because of his simple ability to get things done.
When the Bolsheviks take power in 1917, Lenin puts Stalin in charge of a key government ministry. In 1922, Stalin's named General Secretary of the Communist Party, which was, at the time, a bureaucratic position.
Others contemptuously dismissed him as nothing but a paper pusher. That was a plot that Stalin deliberately cultivated so that people would not find him to be a threat.
So that's how Stalin got himself into a position of power and influence. But to rise to the level of tyrant, he still had to outmaneuver his rivals and outrun his past. Luckily, the playbook has the perfect tactic for wiping the slate clean. Someone once said, "He who controls the past controls the future."
Stalin was a student of history. He recognizes that you can't just sit back and wait for the laws of history to work themselves out. It has to be imposed.
True for Stalin, and these guys as well. In an effort to restore national pride under his rule, Hitler ordered the Nazi High Command to destroy World War I memorials in occupied Europe, erasing evidence of Germany's past defeat. The Kim regime in North Korea insists that South Korea fired the first shots in the Korean War, when in truth, it began when the North Koreans invaded Seoul. While Mao Zedong firmly denied that any Chinese citizen starved as a result of his Great Leap Forward, despite evidence that the resulting famine killed up to 45 million. By 1923, Vladimir Lenin's health is failing. Stalin, along with fellow officials Lev Kamenev and Grigory Zinoviev, are appointed to rule over the country. Meanwhile, Stalin is already planning his next move.
Stalin had to demonstrate that he was the heir of Lenin's, that they shared visions.
But he has one small problem.
Toward the end of his life, Lenin was suspicious of Stalin.
He says Stalin is too rude, he is too intolerant. If he is allowed to continue, I fear that he will divide the party.
January 1924, Lenin is lying on death's door. So now, Stalin begins the process of giving their relationship a more productive spin. After Lenin passes on, Stalin immediately takes charge, planning his funeral. Stalin begins giving passionate lectures on Leninist philosophy. He authorizes the building of a mausoleum for Lenin in the middle of Red Square. And to prove their tight personal bond, Stalin circulates a private photo of himself and Lenin. But first, he has retouchers blow up his figure so that Lenin recedes beside his heir apparent and push them more closely together. As a bonus, they smooth Stalin's complexion, marked by a childhood bout with smallpox, and lengthen his arm, damaged by a childhood carriage accident. It's one of history's first photoshops. Stalin's many efforts to reframe his relationship with Lenin pay off. Over the next 5 years, Stalin fortifies his position atop the Soviet government, sidelining all competition on his path to absolute power.
He became the sole leader of the Soviet Union. And from then on, Stalin produced his own history of the Communist Party. And everyone was taught that view of history.
But doctoring the past will only get you so far if your people have access to other, more current sources of information. If you're really going to win the war on truth, you're just getting started.
One of the most powerful tools that any leader has is who controls the information.
When you can actually shut down channels for information, then you can press one preferred narrative and make that the reality that your citizens live in.
Stalin didn't have to do this all by himself. He had a head start.
Stalin had inherited a totalitarian dictatorship. They already had complete control of the mass media.
And, of course, there had been censorship under Tsarism, but it was chicken feed compared to under Stalin.
And when it came to off-limits subjects, Stalin thought of everything. Individual incomes, out of bounds, price increases, anything involving food shortages or generalized hunger, unspeakable, statistics on crime, unemployment or homelessness, scandalous, reports of natural or man-made disasters such as earthquakes or airplane crashes, news of prison conditions, ads for foreign goods. Oh wait, there's more. The names of government officials and their spouses, the availability of medicine, and anything about the architecture of the Kremlin or repairs to the Bolshoi Theater. Under Stalin, libraries either destroyed or restricted texts that the state deemed offensive, which kept impressionable Soviet minds safely protected from characters like Sherlock Holmes.
Why Sherlock Holmes? Well, Sherlock Holmes, very much his own man. Maybe a little too individualistic for the collectivized mind of Stalinism.
And Robinson Crusoe.
Robinson Crusoe is a kind of capitalist hero. He's entrepreneurial, and he makes do and somehow survives.
If you think censoring books is extreme, wait until you see what happens when a real crisis arrives.
In the late 1920s, to raise revenue for the transformation of the economy, Stalin started this major process of reforming the Soviet agriculture, of trying to put people into collective farms.
They decided to make the peasants the producers for the cities, the army, and export, and the result was famine. Millions of people in Ukraine alone were starving to death. People turned to cannibalism. None of that was reported in the press, and people had no idea it was occurring.
Instead of admitting that the strategy was a mistake, he decided actually to sacrifice these millions of lives for what he saw was a more important goal, which is to preserve the existing socialist system.
So Stalin creates his own reality. It's not totally under control. It's going to be taken care of very shortly. At the same time, Stalin closes off the Ukraine from world view.
But at the end of the day, the vultures in the international press are going to find their way in. Follow the playbook, and you won't have to deal with this problem alone.
In the 1930s, many people in the West, liberals and leftists most importantly, thought the Soviet Union was providing an alternative to the capitalist depression, and so they didn't want to believe bad things about the Soviet Union.
Stalin's predecessor Lenin reportedly had a term for these sorts of unexpected allies, useful idiots.
You basically exploit a vulnerability that they have, their ego, through money, to get on board with your narrative, which then lends credibility and legitimacy to your regime.
Stalin wasn't the only tyrant who knew this. Hitler had prominent early advocates in the Duke and Duchess of Windsor and Charles Lindbergh, who helped elevate his image as a statesman. As much of the world turned against Fidel Castro's tyranny in Cuba, Colombian author Gabriel Garcia Marquez remained a close friend and defender of his regime. And North Korea's Kim Jong-un found an unlikely wingman and former NBA superstar Dennis Rodman. Stalin takes the tactic even further. He invites a series of leftist writers and thinkers from George Bernard Shaw to H.G. Wells to Jean-Paul Sartre, to see the socialist utopia of their dreams firsthand. But to truly sell his version of the truth to the world, Stalin would need to enlist a trusted voice of authority, like Walter Duranty. Duranty had been the New York Times man in Moscow since 1922, but among his fellow journalists, Duranty was more known for his womanizing and wooden leg than for his principles. Rumors of Duranty's ambition and shaky ethics make their way to the Kremlin, where Stalin sees the reporter's potential to help him draw attention away from the ongoing famine. Stalin offers Duranty an exclusive interview at the Kremlin, where he holds court on the wonders of communism and his plan for Soviet prosperity. Duranty is grateful for the access. He writes glowing articles about the Soviet leader. Duranty is invited to visit the Ukraine, which has been off limits to most foreign reporters.
They took him to Ukraine and selectively showed places where there was no famine.
But as he ventures deeper into the countryside, the reality becomes undeniable. Does Duranty report the truth? Nope. He continues filing articles that claim rumors of the famine are overblown. Amazingly, Duranty's fake news reports earn him a Pulitzer Prize, as they shape Stalin's reputation around the world. Now that you've got your censorship regime in place and key allies putting out PR fires abroad, it's time to take your war on truth to the next level. And to do that requires you take aim at the most sacred institution of all.
Religion usually answers the questions that can't be answered. Things like, what's the meaning of life? Why are we here?
But as a tyrant, there's only room for one source of spiritual truth, and God knows that's you.
Stalin wanted to see religion destroyed, not only because of religious doctrine that was the opiate of the masses. They were against the church because it had gold, gems, valuable works of art, wealth that Stalin needed for building the Soviet state.
But to turn your people away from their faith, you need to do more than repress religion. You need to replace it.
In the place of religion, the Soviet Union provided their own dogma. That is what they called Marxism-Leninism.
Instead of Christmas and Easter,
the Soviets created their own holidays. May Day, Labor Day, and November 7th, anniversary of when the Bolsheviks came to power.
And in place of Jesus and the saints, Stalin's regime elevated new communist martyrs for the people to emulate and revere. Like this kid. According to the story, 13-year-old Pavlik Morozov was a model student and ardent young communist, living in a small village deep in the Ural Mountains. But one day, during the Great Famine, his loyalty to the state is tested when he discovers his father has been hoarding grain and selling it for profit. Young Pavlik makes the patriotic choice. He informs on his father, alerting the local secret police to his crimes. But his uncle, grandparents, and cousin are not impressed. They surprise young Pavlik in the nearby forest and murder him. As the Soviet newspapers spread word of the horrendous crime, Pavlik becomes a folk hero, and his relatives are executed. Stalin makes sure Pavlik's story lives on. His exploits are retold in songs, plays, books, and a full-length opera. This heroic tale has a twist.
The story is probably false. Since the end of the Soviet Union, we've learned Pavlik Morozov is an invented Soviet myth as part of their propaganda efforts.
But if you think that matters, you haven't been paying attention. Because when you replace religion with the state, your truth becomes divine. And yet, some of your people will still stubbornly cling to another set of truths, so-called scientific facts. Don't worry, you can take care of those too.
The whole culture of science and research, where you have the notion of objective facts and conclusions that draw not on ideology but factual accuracy, is anathema to tyrants.
Well, of course it is, because scientists think their truth is superior. But that can't possibly be the case. Spanish dictator Francisco Franco dissolved the nation's scientific research board and rejected theories like evolution that he and his party saw as incompatible with their Christian beliefs. Hitler and the Third Reich strictly controlled which areas of science could be pursued, at one point rejecting relativity and quantum mechanics in favor of fields like Aryan physics. President Yahya Jammeh of Gambia reportedly forced thousands of people with HIV to refuse traditional treatments in favor of his own personal remedy that he claimed could eradicate the virus within 3 days. Needless to say, it did not.
Stalin's view of scientific disciplines was in many ways dictated by his ideological dogma. If certain facts didn't fit that particular paradigm, they could be ignored, and scientists were incentivized to ignore those facts.
One guy who truly got this was revolutionary biologist Trofim Lysenko. Lysenko was sure that the solution to the Soviet Union's ongoing food shortages was to apply Marxist principles to plants.
He did all kinds of silly things, like, for example, he would take grain and he would expose grain to cold, thinking that future generations of that grain will be cold resistant. And of course, it's completely absurd. But he framed this idea as being closer to the Marxist principles. And Stalin actually really liked it.
Stalin invites Lysenko to speak at the Kremlin, where Lysenko assails modern genetics, questions the loyalty of the nation's scientists, and promises that his revolutionary theories will end hunger in the USSR forever. Stalin likes what he hears. Within just a few years, all other theories of genetics are banned, professors removed from their positions, and labs are shut down. Gets rooted out.
There was a war that got started within Soviet science, Soviet biology in particular, as a consequence of this.
In propaganda, Stalin portrays Lysenko as a scientific genius and revolutionary. But in practice, Lysenko's theories fail completely, leading to even more death and hardship among the Soviet people. So naturally, Lysenko remains in his post until 1964.
Stalin saw Lysenko's ability to mend facts in a particular discipline as an important expression of loyalty. And for Stalin, this expression of loyalty was more important than the scientific fact itself.
Let's check in. After discrediting science, destroying religion, rewriting history, and replacing troublesome facts with propaganda, your war on truth should be bearing fruit. But there's one more obstacle on your path to absolute control over your people's minds and lives: their faith in each other.
Connections among citizens. This is a threat in an authoritarian system. There can be no principles or values that are higher than loyalty and obedience to the person in charge.
Crushing this threat is going to take a strong stomach, so buckle up.
The phenomenon of distrust is an exceptionally powerful tool. If you no longer trust anyone, you willingly give yourself to the power of the state because everything else is suspect.
You'd think after all of Stalin's hard work fighting the war on truth, he'd have this in the bag. But a tyrant's job is never done.
In 1934, the truth of the matter is that there were still problems for Stalin's grip on power. All of the enemies had not been vanquished.
The beginning of the process were the show trials in Moscow, where leading figures of the Communist Party apparatus were put on a public trial on the charges of being members of a anti-Soviet conspiracy.
But when it came to turning his people against each other, the government purges were just the appetizer.
If these heroes of the revolution can be traitors, who else can be a traitor? The conclusion is obvious. Anybody.
It was a general line that, look, we have mass conspiracy against our new state. Now your job is to go out and find those conspirators.
What's a loyal citizen to do?
Neighbors starting denouncing neighbors. In some cases, children started denouncing their parents.
It all swirled into a kind of snowball of bloodletting. The Great Terror.
During the Great Terror, over 750,000 people were killed. And for Stalin, it was all part of his master plan.
He wrote a memo. If you kill 100 people, and 5 of them were enemies of the people, that's not a bad ratio. That was Stalin's model. Doesn't matter you kill too many. It matters if you kill too few.
As for anyone who might think of saying no, the accusations against their fellow citizens aren't true, there's a simple answer.
True? The party decides what is true. There is a higher truth in these dictatorships. And that is the truth of power.
By redefining truth for millions of his citizens, Stalin maintained a stranglehold over the Soviet Union for another 15 years. You'd assume after all that, he would be remembered as a villain. But the truth is more complicated.
A lot of people do revere Stalin as a great leader. At the massive, massive human cost, was able to transform the Soviet society from agricultural to industrial. If you define success as achieving the goals, he was very successful.
Now you know the secret of Stalin's epic reign. But tyranny isn't just about controlling minds. It's about the power to rebuild society in your own image. Take it from this man, Muammar Gaddafi, who used his singular vision and billions in oil wealth to turn the desert nation of Libya into his own personal shrine.
All my people, they love me, all.
What could possibly go wrong?
The reason I'm playing this How to Become a Tyrant thing is so that you guys can evaluate the similarities between then and right now. Anyway, survivalenterprises.com, se1.us. Keep your nose in the air, your ear to the ground, and this is the Armchair Survivalist signing off.